afternoon. I'm Julie Smith-Wiglione, and I'm going to take the first part of this presentation and tell you a little bit about the Latino population in South Carolina and why this program came to be, kind of what it looks like, and then I'll pass it over to Dr. Billings, who will go through what we've done so far and where we're headed. So, we have no relationship to disclose. Just one mention, we also have our third colleague with us sitting up here in the front row, Margarita Franco, who is also a key part in this project. So just to tell you a little bit about the immigrant population in South Carolina, some of you may know this, others it may be a surprise, but South Carolina is among the top five states with the fastest growing Latino population currently, and it has been that way for about the past 5 to 7 years. So as you can see here, this is the percent growth of the counties that this Puentes project is going to be affecting. You can see in South Carolina, between 2000 and 2007, we've had an 82% growth. In Lexington County and Richland County, which is the central part of the state where this project will be working, we've had 109% growth and 50% growth. And that's just in those 7 years. And then as for the countries of origin, where the Latino population is coming from, around 63% of them are coming from Mexico, and then we have a number of different groups, with the second largest group being folks coming in from Central America, predominantly Guatemala and Honduras, which those of you who work with the Latino population, you may recognize that many of the immigrants coming from Central American countries, especially Guatemalans, and those coming into the southeastern part of the United States come from indigenous cultures that bring with them their indigenous languages as well, which for healthcare systems that aren't quite set up to meet the needs of culturally diverse populations, it provides a different challenge. So what does our population look like? The majority of Latinos in South Carolina are younger and poorer than the white or the African-American populations. Their median age is around 26, which in our field of reproductive health means that it's right in the middle of childbearing years. Median income is about $18,000, and that's a household income, whereas for the white population, it's about $30,000, and for African-American populations, it's $20,000. And then when you compare birth rates for Latino women in South Carolina, it's almost triple. As I was mentioning, the age of the population, it's about triple the birth rate of the white and the African-American populations, 38.8. For Latinos as opposed to 13 for whites and about 17 for African-Americans. So that's a little bit kind of a snapshot of what the population looks like. So what are the challenges? What are the gaps in services that our moderator alluded to that were discovered in this needs assessment? Well, some of the issues that came up are that Latino women in our states have higher rates of inadequate prenatal care and higher rates of certain types of birth defects, especially around neural tube defects. For late initiation or no prenatal care whatsoever in South Carolina, 38.3% per 1,000 enter into this category. And because we're a state that traditionally has not had much of a Latino population, it's been quite a challenge for the health services system to be able to adapt. And we're not exactly in the most progressive area of our country, which may be a surprise to some of you. But our health services system was not prepared to meet the needs of a different culture and of a different linguistic group, and they have not adapted as quickly as maybe they could have. Some of the barriers to care include those that I'm sure you're familiar with. Language, of course, always comes up first, but also some very confrontational, at times, discrimination, fear around immigration status, lack of understandable information. So even if it's in their language, being able to understand that information, and then, of course, your whole plethora of logistical barriers. And then you have, you know, I mentioned in that former bullet, fear and discrimination. Well, one of the recent reports from the Southern Poverty Law Center that came out about Latinos in the New South settlement area showed that Latinos in our area of the country are facing widespread hostility and exploitation, and even went as far to say as racial subordination. So these are some of the issues that the population is facing. So I'm the director of what's called PASOS, and PASOS was created in 2005 after an MCH needs assessment revealed that there were a lot of gaps in services. And our mission is to work with Latino families in education, outreach, partnership, and advocacy to advance maternal and child health and help the community use their own cultural strengths to really make sure that their communities are healthy now and in the future. And we're currently, we started in the two central counties of South Carolina, and we're currently in 13 out of 46. So what is Puentes? Puentes in Spanish means bridges, and it's got a twofold objective. It builds on the success of what PASOS has been able to achieve so far, and it's funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and their Local Funding Partnerships Initiative. We also have six local funders, which is a requirement of the Robert Wood Johnson, of this grant line. It was just recently funded in July. It's a grassroots leadership development initiative, so we're going to be training community health workers, but we're calling them community ambassadors because they're going to have a dual function. So what they're going to be is precisely what the title refers to. They're going to be bridges. So community health workers in their own communities to educate their peers in the most culturally and linguistically appropriate way, but also as bridges into making inroads and changes into our healthcare system. So just to run through a couple of our, a few of our values, and then I'll turn it over to Dr. Billings and our objectives. One of our biggest things that we focus on is that this project and everything that we do with PASOS is that the programs are community-based and not culturally based and not culturally placed, meaning it's a model that's been developed with and in the community we serve, not something that was developed for a majority population or even another minority population that was then translated into Spanish and subjected onto them. It's a safe space. We practice what's called power sharing versus power over, so working with the community at all times to make sure that input is included and that they are making decisions that will affect the program. It's strengths focused, so looking at what the immigrants themselves bring to the tables. We're basing it on evidence-based practices and a commitment to systemic change. So our goal is that by 2014, when this phase of the project ends, that Latinos and Latinas living in the central counties of South Carolina will have better reproductive health. And to achieve that, it's a four-pronged strategy, basically what I mentioned, that the leaders themselves are going to be trained on certain core strategies around reproductive health, leadership and communication, English language, and how to help their peers navigate the healthcare system. They'll also work within their communities to promote these health messages and help folks navigate systems of care. But then they're also going to be prepared to engage in dialogue with healthcare decision makers. So those folks who are at the health departments, those folks who are in leadership positions in clinics and hospitals, to start looking at what are the systemic changes that need to happen so that there's more access to care for this vulnerable population. And those proposals and those dialogues will result in changes that we'll be able to show have come from this process of the leaders having been prepared to bring voices from their community forward and say, this is what our population needs in order to be healthy and successful from here on out. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Dr. Billings.
Okay, so thank you. So you can see that this is a young project. And we have a lot of work ahead of us, but you know, really, this is being grounded in some real successes in the PASOS program. So right now, the PASOS program has been working with 15 community health promotoras and promotores, because there's one man in the group right now, which we see as huge success. And one of the things that we want to do with Puentes is increase the number of men, including young men and young women, involved as promotores in the community. So some of these existing promotoras are going to be candidates for community ambassadors. Not everyone will move from the PASOS to the Puentes stage. I conducted interviews with a number of the promotoras, and just in a nutshell, giving you some sense of what they're saying in terms of what does it mean to them to be a promotora. And one woman said, I feel like I have the opportunity to feel positive about myself because I have the chance to help another person. I put myself in their shoes because I've been through what they've been through. And that's just so key. Those of us who've been, you know, working with community health workers, promotoras, know that that is part of the key, that they're able to put themselves in other people's shoes because they're part of the community and they've gone through similar processes. And it's just so much more effective in terms of when they're communicating with their peers and fellow community members. Another promotora said, being a promoter is the most beautiful experience, and that's a literal translation. I just thought, you know, beautiful experience that I've had because I learned in the talks and training so many things. It means to put these things into practice to help people. And everyone that I interviewed just had this sense of, you know, I came here feeling pretty isolated, pretty alone, not really feeling I had a space to contribute to society, and now working through this process, through PASOS, and we're hoping to see this through Puentes as well, finding a space within this world that they inhabit and feeling like they're able to contribute. And it's such a sense of empowerment and a sense of value in their lives that, you know, our guess is that it's certainly contributing to their own health, physical health, spiritual health, mental health, and that they're able to then transmit that to the people that they're working with. Some of the needs that they expressed for future work, because they're still really at very initial stages in this work. The promotora or health, community healthcare workers kinds of programs are really at an infancy stage in South Carolina, unlike in some other states where it's much more advanced, institutionalized, etc. So the promotoras expressed the need for English classes. They want to be able to communicate. They want to be able to express their needs and concerns to policymakers, to healthcare providers, to others in their community. They expressed a need for didactic materials for participatory learning. How do we not just stand in front of a group and talk? How do we engage people in participatory learning? Lots of educational materials about different health issues. Learning more in depth about those health issues, not just through the educational materials, but through training and practice. And then wanting to learn more about ways to reach and motivate their peers effectively. So we've got also another dimension of this project, community partners. And right now we've got about 30 community partners that signed on to the project and really helped to get this grant from Robert Wood Johnson. They include actors from the Department of Health, local NGOs and social service organizations, and local churches. We've had two meetings with these community partners and leaders in those organizations. And I guess just as, you know, in a nutshell, the sense of enthusiastic participation and people being really excited about this work and saying it's not only going to be a way to reach the Latino population, but maybe ways of thinking about reaching the other populations in South Carolina in new and innovative ways. And so far we've put out a questionnaire, 14 organizations have responded about their work with Latinos, saying things like some serve the entire population of South Carolina, some serve the population just in the local area, either directly or through providing funding to local CBOs or programs serving the Latino population. We asked about staff positions, and this was really telling. It wasn't surprising to us, but I think these are the telling kinds of things, that about half the respondents in these community organizations said that they have a full-time position to work with the Latino population, but only about half of the people occupying those positions speak Spanish. Several part-time staff do not speak Spanish or just speak a little bit, and the majority of organizations or institutions reported that they've got positions now, but they're funded for very limited periods of time. So we're constantly coming up against that challenge of how do we institutionalize these positions so that they're not just around for a few years until the funding goes away. So some of the next steps, we have a million next steps, but some of the key next steps that we have in mind are convening an advisory board. We've already put that together, comprised of, you know, important decision makers in these counties, people whose voices from different sectors that can help guide our actions, and people that other decision makers will pay attention to. We need to conduct in-depth interviews with existing community partners, and we need to reach out and include a whole array of other partners that aren't necessarily working right now with the Latino population, but have an interest in doing so. We're conducting interviews for the community ambassadors. We've got a whole you know, many years of work and training and capacity building for all of us, not just for the community ambassadors, but for everyone. And then we want to incorporate a strong research component into this work, including work on community assets, community mapping, looking at social networks and how those social networks are strengthened over time through this work, and really trying to incorporate very participatory methods in reaching those research goals. So we're excited about the next steps. We hope to keep sharing what we're learning, you know, in future APHA sessions, and we'll have a lot more detail in next year's conference, and we'll be putting out we'll be starting a website and just lots of ways to disseminate the information. So thank you so much.